Funding for Think comes from the SMU Certificate Program in Financial Planning.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What can we do as patients to ensure the best possible outcomes for ourselves within the healthcare system? Being sick can make it feel like we have lost control over how we feel. But as my guest today has come to believe over more than 40 years in medicine, we consumers of healthcare have more power than we might realize to affect whether we stay or get well, but we also have more responsibility than we may realize. Dr. Judy Cook is a practicing psychiatrist from Sherman, Texas, who also has a background in pathology. Her new book is called To Die or Not to Die, 10 Tricks to Getting Better Medical Care. Judy, welcome to Think.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So if there's a takeaway from this book, it's that we cannot rely exclusively on healthcare providers to keep us well or to make us well. How commonly do you find patients sort of make that assumption that the doctor's in charge?
All the time. That's why I wrote the book. And I think I was inspired by one patient too many who came in telling me they were there because they had such and such disease that they'd learned on such and such commercial and they needed that medicine. And then I would say, okay, what medicines are you on? Oh, I've got a little pink pill and a little white pill. And there was zero responsibility for looking out for their own health or even knowing what they're taking. Just sort of turning it over to the doctor like Marcus Welby's just going to take care of them and do everything for them like mommy does. And they've got to know that's not how it is anymore.
And patients who are on multiple medications, this comes up over and over in the book, really need to know what they are, because sometimes they can make us feel really bad if we're taking two things that are counterindicated.
Absolutely. Knowing that medications can interact with each other, and not just prescription medicines. Everything that you take over the counter or from your local homeopathic expert or whatever, they are all things that can interfere, cause a side effect, cause a drug interaction. And the more medications you take, the higher your risk of having some sort of problem.
So we go to the doctor, and typically there's a little file of our medical history, but you say it's important not to rely on that exclusively. We should have our own records that we take with us.
Yes, because, you know, you go in last year and something's going on, and then by the time you come in this year, so there's something else happening. There may be things you remembered from the past that are significant. You know, when you're not feeling good, you're not always the best historian. Mm-hmm. So it's important to write that down. And it's particularly important if you have something unusual to keep records of that with you as well. But knowing your history, being able to present your history quickly and concisely is important, and you can do that a whole lot better if you have it written down, even if it's just in a brief format.
So it comes up in the book that one thing that is frustrating to many doctors is that patients spend a lot of time talking about things that maybe don't matter, and then at the very end of the visit say, oh, and by the way, I'm having this symptom. First of all, as patients, how should we know what does matter? Which symptoms you need to know about and which ones are probably not a big deal?
Well, you know, what happens is, you know, either they forget what was bothering them or they come in and they just kind of want to chit chat about Aunt Sally and this and that and the other. But you're there. I mean, first of all, you're not the doctor's only patient. Mm-hmm. Okay. There are a lot of other patients that they have to talk to. So the doctor's time is limited also. But you know what's paining you. You know what's bothering you. And one of the reasons for writing those notes ahead of time is so that when something's bothering you, you make the note right then. And then you focus on those things that are bothering you and not talk about the weather or the politics or your family. And when a doctor says, please get to the point, do that because it helps your health care.
Mm-hmm. So we should prepare ourselves to go to the doctor.
Yes, ma'am, you certainly should. Mm-hmm. I hand every patient who comes in a questionnaire, and I give them copies to take home with them, and I explain it's on the website, where they can write down what they want to talk about with me today. Because even in psychiatry, that's important. And then they can take notes about what we talk about. Because, again, when you're in the doctor's office, maybe you're not feeling good, whatever, it can be easy to forget. And when I go to great effort to explain to you what's going on, and then the next morning you're calling saying, oh, what did the doctor say? You're not involved in your care and treatment. You're not taking good care of yourself. You've got to do that.
Of course, it's important to follow the rules that have been established. And you know, we need to take care of our diet and exercise and sleep. And that also comes up a lot. Can you talk about what you've learned about why patients who would not think of deviating from like a new medication regime find it harder to make some of those lifestyle changes, and what we can do about that reality? Whether you like it or not, it's true that people have trouble, right, with these changes.
Absolutely. And part of it is they just want to think if they ignore it, it'll go away. Or they say, oh, that's so hard. I mean, I hear that all the time about smoking and exercising and even following diet. Well, is it easy to be 200 pounds overweight and have heart disease and blood sugar problems and your joints hurt? You know, people need to think about where they're going with these things and do what it takes, whether they need to engage friends to help them, they need to set up a schedule to do it. You know, they've got to be aware of the consequences if they don't stop, you know. And the old thing of, well, I've got to die about from something, well, if you're prepared to die from it, why are you going to the doctor? And if you're going to go to the doctor and try to get well, we don't have magic wands. You got to do your part.
So what do you do about meeting patients where they are and trying to communicate that? It sounds like a source of frustration. What have you learned about the best ways to kind of get that through,
well,
people?
Again, I stress to them what their consequences are, mm-hmm, for themselves if they don't do it. And then I try to make constructive suggestions to them of the ways that they can do it. For example, with exercise, if you can get a friend that likes to exercise to do that with you, okay? When people have diet problems, I tell them, don't go on crazy diets where you're giving up all of this or that or the other, because you're not going to stick with that. Mm-hmm. Just work at cutting your portions down by 10%. Cut out all of that sugar that you're getting, because that really adds up. And I give them very simple instructions that make it easy for them to creep up on things a little bit at a time. Because if you try and eat that whole elephant in one bite, it will never get done.
What do you suggest to people who have difficult things to talk with their doctor about, things that they might find embarrassing or that they might think the doctor disapproves of, but that you need to know to properly care for them?
Well, I tell patients all the time, if you don't give me your history or you give me the wrong history, then I'm treating you for the wrong thing and I'm not going to get you better. Mm-hmm. You know, doctors hear all kinds of bad stuff from people all day, every day. There's not much of anything you can come up with that we haven't heard before and that we're not willing to help you with. But if you don't tell us, if you don't tell us that you've got a social disease, if you don't tell us that you're abusing drugs or any number of other things, that you're not following your diet, you're not taking your medicines, and we assume you are, then we make adjustments based on that, and that can be much worse for your health. I mean, we can get you in a downward spiral with medications and things that can really make you a whole lot sicker. So it's really important to you, to be honest.
And do you find that patients are using more medication now than they were when you first started?
Oh, my God, yes. When I first started in psychiatry, we had a handful of psychiatric medicines. Mm-hmm. And now we have a semi-truck load of them. But part of what drives more use of them is, of course, all of the advertising. In 1997 or 1999, the FDA decided that it was okay to advertise with TV and radio and all this sort of thing. And so now they spend billions and billions of dollars trying to sell you a disease you don't have, so you'll take a medicine you don't need. And people buy into this. They do very good psychology to convince them they've got these problems. And so people come in reaching for more and more medicines. And doctors are fairly susceptible as well to being sold on these things are important. I mean, if you look at it, you know, the medical school professors do the research and then they teach the students. And so it's sort of a passed down thing of this is what's important. And yet all of that tends to be driven from behind by the pharmaceutical companies and their advertising and marketing. And they're just almost as honest as the cigarette company advertising. And they do such a good psychological job that people go out and regularly buy something that has a 60% chance of causing them an illness or their death. Mm. So these marketers are very, very skilled. And so patients have to get very skilled at looking at these with a jaded eye and saying, wait a minute, what are they really trying to sell me here? And let me back up and think about that. And by all means, don't go in and tell the doctor you've got this diagnosis. Go in, tell them the things that you're worried about, and then be open about talking about them rather than demanding you've got to have this med. And I think it's important for a patient also to not think, gee, the more pills I take, the better I'm going to be, because it just doesn't work that way.
So you seem easy to talk to, but I would imagine that there are patients who, you know, there is sort of a power dynamic going on, right, between physician and patient, even if it's unintentional, that the doctor knows everything and the patient really doesn't. How do you suggest people ask their doctors, respectfully but effectively, hey, do I really need this medication that you've prescribed for me? I don't feel like it's working. What's a good way to approach that?
Just exactly that way. Mm-hmm. You know, doc, I started taking this medicine and I don't think that things have changed, or even I'm feeling worse since I started it. The interesting thing is when people have been on a medicine for 10 years and all of a sudden they decide that that's causing their problem and they have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you just have to encourage them to look at really when did this change? How did this change? And don't hesitate to ask the doctor. You're there to find out. You're there to avail yourself of the doctor's knowledge. And as long as you're not sitting there acting like you know more than the doctor does, it's not going to be a problem. If it is a problem, then you probably need to change doctors.
And we at least need to make a phone call, I gather, if we decide that we want to go off a medication that we have been prescribed.
Yes, if you want to go off of it or you want to change the dose or anything like that, confer with your doctor. There may be a very important reason why you shouldn't go off it or a very important way to go off of it. For some medications, if you stop them abruptly, you're going to have a reaction, a problem. You could have a very serious kind of problem. For example, some of the medicines that we use for bipolar disorder are actually seizure medicines. So if you abruptly stop these medicines, even though you don't have a seizure disorder as a primary problem, you may wind up having a seizure. You don't want to have that kind of problem. Xanax, for some people, if they stop that abruptly, they'll get psychotic. So you really need to talk to the doctor about the appropriate way to get off of a medication.
We're speaking this hour with Dr. Judy Cook. She's a practicing psychiatrist from Sherman, Texas, and author of the new book, To Die or Not to Die, 10 Tricks to Getting Better Medical Care. If you've got a question, we would love to entertain it now. You can call 1-800-933-5372, send email to think@kera.org, or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Certificate Program in Financial Planning, with classroom instruction, a CFP board-registered curriculum, and flexible class schedules. Applications accepted now for the program, which begins March 31st. SMU.edu/CPFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with psychiatrist Dr. Judy Cook. She also has a background in pathology, and she is author of the new book, To Die or Not to Die, 10 Tricks to Getting Better Medical Care. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. And Judy, the book is out as of today. Is that right?
Actually, it came out the 1st of April,
okay.
But today we're actually doing a book blast to try and get it to bestseller on Amazon. So if you go to Amazon and click on it before 5 o'clock today, that may help us get up there with the blast. And you can just type in the book name, todieornottodie.com/launch, and it's even some bonuses there that you can get for it. So if you like what you're hearing, go get it.
Well, there you go. All right, let's talk about the best ways to find a doctor, because it's an important relationship, particularly for people who are coping with chronic health issues that will cause them to be in their doctor's office several times a year.
Yes, and it is so important, especially with chronic illnesses, to find a regular doctor that you like, that you trust, that you can work with.
Mm-hmm.
So many people wait till the last minute, and then they go to the emergency room and things of that sort. And emergency rooms are for emergencies. You need an internist or a family practice doctor that you see on a regular basis, and then they can help you if you need the emergency room or a specialist or something of that nature. And again, it is so important that you get a doctor that you like, that you trust, that you feel like you can talk to, because I mean, how are you going to relate to a doctor if you go in and you kind of feel like you're under the microscope, or you're being judged, or they don't like you, or any of those other things? And there are a myriad of ways to find good doctors. I mean, you can go even go to the medical licensing board in your state and find doctors in your specialty that you need in your part of the country. You can call medical schools. You can go a lot of places. Beware of docs that have big television commercials or big yellow page ads, because those are, you know, a little bit more likely to have some problems. But really important to have a personal doctor.
So the folks on your staff, as on the staffs of, I think, probably a lot of physicians around the country, have become quite adept at dealing with the insurance companies and navigating all that. But there are things that patients can do as well to try and advocate for the treatments that their doctors say they need.
Well, it's really important to realize that insurance companies want to take your money. They don't really want to pay it out. They're not much more interested in your physical well-being than Bernie Madoff is in people's fiscal well-being. And in fact, that pretty much applies to all of the medical industrial complex, which is, you know, hospitals, insurance companies, pharmaceutical companies, equipment companies. So you need to know how to deal with these companies. And with the insurance company, you may have to push really hard and even do some really drastic things. But you call them, you talk to them, you always be sure you get the names of the people you talk to. You document what was said and when the discussion was held. And if they don't get back to you fairly promptly with a good response, you call them again. If you need to, you go over their head. And you may even wind up needing to go to the vice president in charge of claims. Now, you know, office staff can help some with that, but sometimes you really need to be your own advocate and you really need to push. I have one lady who had an urgent problem at nighttime. Fortunately, she worked for her insurance company. She still had to spend many, many hours till the wee hours of the morning calling multiple people to get something that she very much needed done, approved. So you have to be determined and tenacious. And when you know you've got a problem and you know it's covered, you stay after them.
What do you say to patients who might be reluctant to take certain treatments, to go on particular medications because money is an issue for them, whether they're insured or not? How important is it to communicate that to? Do you talk to the doctor? Do you talk to the office staff? Who do you talk to?
You're going to talk to the doctor because the doctor's doing the prescribing and writing the prescriptions.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, Generic drugs will often do, and an awful lot of the newer drugs that come out that get all this hype and they're so much better and they're so much wonderful and this and that and the other, they really aren't. They're a slight modification on the old medicine. They're really not any better. They just cost a whole heck of a lot more. Mm-hmm. When you get a new medicine where they're passing out samples, you can be guaranteed it's going to be really, really pricey. And it's apt to be tier 4 on your insurance, which means you're going to have a huge copay. So you talk to the doc and you say, hey, look, you know, my insurance isn't going to do this, or I don't have any insurance. And what can you give me in generic that'll do the same job? And then once you have that prescription in hand, you either start calling different pharmacies and ask what each of them would charge for it.
Because the prices vary.
The prices vary, and so many patients have no idea that not all pharmacies charge the same thing for the same drug. There are a couple of handy places you can go also to research that. Costco, actually, if you go to Costco's website, type in pharmacy, and then go to price list, they actually list on their site what their prices are for given medications, and they tend to be at the low end on prices. There's another site, goodrx.com, and they will help you look at pharmacies in your area and the different prices. So that's another thing that you can do. And of course, if you're really hard up, you go somewhere like United Way or somewhere like that, where they can get you the medications, or you ask the doctor for samples. And those are the ways you want to go to handle that.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now. We have Daniel on the line in Dallas. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, Chris. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I love your show. I listen to it every day.
Thank you.
Two questions kind of wrapped into one for the doc, kind of relating back to the timing of just going in and asking for a medication. So the first part is, you know, along the lines of the over-medication that we face today, I'm in total agreeance. You know, we as a society probably take too much. But my question is, when is it appropriate to go in and say, hey, I saw this commercial, this aligns with some of my symptoms, before a doctor thinks, okay, you're just being a hypochondriac or whatever? And that kind of leads into my second question in relation to the doctor-patient relationship. You know, I understand that doctors are busy and they have a lot of patients, but I, for one, look forward to the personal relationship that I have with my doctor and talking to him about my family, because I'm not just getting an oil change or buying a house. I really want that personal connection with them. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that as it relates to the discussion you've been having.
Thanks for your call.
All right. Well, first of all, with the issue of the medications, certainly if you hear something on an ad and it strikes a bell and you suddenly think, gee, that sounds like something I've got, well, of course, bring that up with your doctor. We always have times when we think of stuff we hadn't thought of before. And yes, bring that up, discuss it. Just don't walk in and act like you've now made the magic diagnosis and you know more than the doc. Bring it up as an issue for discussion. And it might be correct, but it might be totally incorrect. And, you know, I understand wanting to go in and be able to just sit back and relax and talk with the doctor. But the reality these days is that most doctors don't have the time to do that. Your psychiatrists, even most of us, prescribe just medicines. I'm one of the rare birds that does psychotherapy. So I'm there to talk to you. But it's a matter of, you know, the doctor's on a tight schedule. And of course, this is pushed by the drug companies and the insurance companies, who want you to just kind of run in, get lots of meds, run out. And the less of a personal relationship you have with your doctor, then the easier it is for everybody to just deal with things like medication. So there's a lot of marketing manipulation behind that. But if you have a doc that you know real well, you know, they may well be willing to take that time with you, and you just manage to schedule a somewhat longer appointment with them so you can do that. I think more doctors are getting smart about having their office staff kind of screen you with what's going on so that they know, do you need a 10-minute appointment, a 15-minute, a 30-minute, an hour appointment, you know, are you coming in as a new patient, so that they try to allow enough time in their schedule that they can see you without then being late for everybody else in their schedule, because people's fantasy is always that the doc is busy golfing or doing something other than being there to see the patient, and that's why they're running late. But in fact, it's usually related to something with patient care. So work with your doctor to plan that if that's what you want.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Gabriel is on the line now in Fort Worth. Hi, Gabriel.
Hi, Chris. Thank you for taking on this topic, because this is a very sensitive issue for a lot of people. But I have to agree with everything that your guest is saying, because I work in a medical practice. I work in an ophthalmology practice, and I find that we have two types of patients, and those are the ones that know everything and think we're wrong, and the ones that don't know anything and don't do their treatment because they're lazy or they just don't want to. And, you know, this is our knowledge. You know, this isn't something that we came by because we're lucky. You know, we've gone to medical school for this kind of stuff. And with the Internet being a thing, you know, we have these people that come in that say, hey, I found this online, and, oh, God, here comes the headache because we just don't know what we're getting ourselves into. So what do we do to get our patients to trust that we know what we're talking about?
Thanks for your call, Gabriel.
You know, there's a doc in Dallas that has a really interesting solution to that particular issue of the person who reads an article and comes in. He encourages people when they're in the process of discussing things. He says, now, I expect you, before we do this procedure, to go online and read at least 10 articles from different resources about this. And I want you to come in with questions based on that so that I can answer your questions. That, of course, gets people having to look at a lot of different resources, realize how much different information there is out there. And then when you're able to discuss it with them, they realize, yeah, you've got the training, and they do need to learn from you. So I understand those patients are very, very frustrating. You know, it's kind of like an elementary school student trying to teach a professional basketball player how to shoot baskets, you know, and they just don't understand the difference. And in terms of the ones who seem unmotivated to take care of themselves, it's very, very frustrating. Again, I try to push them, nudge them, make them aware of how important it is to them and that I can't do it all for them, and just keep re-educating them. And that's as much as we can do with them.
How common is it for doctors to quit a patient?
Probably not that common. Once a patient comes in, we pretty much stick with them. We do get those occasional patients where there's clearly a personality conflict. And I've had some come in, and they come in for the first session, and I say, you know, this is not going to work. And let me give you a list of names of other doctors here that you can check with. Because for some reason, you know, they don't like me, or they're very argumentative or whatever. They strike a chord in me that I don't like. There are also those patients who will get mad and quit because you're not giving them what they want when they want it. Now, most of the time, those are substance abusers, but there are others who think they know more than you do, and they're going to tell you how to practice, and when you don't do it their way, they get mad. People will get mad. Of course, I don't have to deal with the issue of antibiotics, but you don't give them the antibiotic they want when they think they need it. And so if you try to educate them about why it's important to do other things, they'll get mad. They'll threaten to report you to the licensing board. They'll storm out of your office. They'll quit. But most of the terminations are either going to be early on when there's a mess up, you don't get along with each other, or later on when the patient decides that you're not going to do what they think you should do, and they know more about their situation than they do. So they go looking for another doctor who's going to give them what they want.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Doug in Dallas. Hi, Doug.
Hi. I have a question relating to the sort of psychiatric diagnostic process. I've been seeing several psychiatrists and psychologists for the better part of a decade, and I move a lot. Therefore, every time I move, I have to start over with a new medical professional. And I'm wondering how I can, or what the doctor thinks would be the best way to sort of expedite the initial diagnostic process. It feels like sort of Sisyphus, where every time I get somewhere with the doctor, then I just have to start all over again. Mm. So I was wondering if you could just get any advice about how I could transition from doctor to doctor and transition my history more effectively.
Thanks for your call.
You know, what I would suggest, if you know you're going to be moving around a lot, is that you get copies of your medical records from the doctor and keep those with you, and then make a copy for your new doctor. And if it's pretty complicated, you may even want to do something like, you know, type out a summary of how you see your record and your problems being, so that it kind of condenses that information, and then be able to very clearly be able to say, this is what I've been treated for. These are the medicines I've been tried on that did work and I'm on right now. These are the things I've been tried on that don't work, so that you're prepared to kind of encapsulate. Now, a good psychiatrist is going to sit and ask you those questions, but unfortunately, I see too many of my colleagues where they think that 10 minutes is more than enough to get an adequate history. And in that case, you really want to go in with paperwork, know what's on it, and be able to say, hey, here's what it says from my latest doctor, and here's why I think this is what's going on. I want you to take it from a doctor's opinion. And if you have anything complicated, really keep those records.
And if a doctor says something that sort of doesn't jive with something that you know to be true about yourself, for example, if you have an allergy to a medication and then you get a prescription for that medication because, you know, the doctor somehow overlooked it, by all means, we should speak up about that sort of
absolutely.
Thing and not expect you to remember.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when we have hundreds or thousands of patients we're following, we're human. I mean, I hate to tell you, but doctors are human. And so, yes, say, wait a minute, I can't take this medication. Mm-hmm. And if they insist on giving you a medication when you know you're allergic to it, the doctor won't listen to you that way, then it's time to consider a different doctor.
We're speaking this hour with Dr. Judy Cook, a psychiatrist from Sherman, Texas. Her new book is called To Die or Not to Die, 10 Tricks to Getting Better Medical Care. We'll take more of your calls after the break. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Certificate Program in Financial Planning with classroom instruction, a CFP board-registered curriculum, and flexible class schedules. Applications accepted now for the program, which begins March 31st. SMU.edu/CPFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with psychiatrist Dr. Judy Cook. Her new book is called To Die or Not to Die, 10 Tricks to Getting Better Medical Care. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. We have a question here from Janice via email who says, what do I need to include in my medical history? And I guess she means the one that she keeps for herself.
Well, you want to have the current symptoms of whatever it is that's bothering you, and that's certainly very important. You need to list your allergies. You need to list, you know, whatever things you've been treated for in the past. And many times it's important to go all the way back to infancy. If you've had any kind of significant illnesses, you know, when your mother was pregnant during her, or was sick during her pregnancy, all the way through childhood illnesses, accidents, injuries. So you need to have all of those sorts of things in your history. If you've got psychological stressors going on, life changes going on. Those are all important to list. You need certainly to list your current medicines, but also past medications that you have tried. And if they have worked for you, and if so, why you stopped them. If they didn't work for you, what was going on with them? Because every medication that we give a patient, in a way, is like a chemical probe. Every patient is very, very different. And so I might have 20 people in the room with depression, and it might take 20 different medication mm-hmm. arrays to bring that patient under control. But whatever happens to you with given medication is going to give me some indicator of where I would go next in terms of what we're going to do. It's also useful to have the names and contact information for prior doctors. And if you have any kind of unusual disorder, I have a lady who has a problem with her potassium level, a very unusual disorder, and she carries research articles around with her so that the doctor doesn't think she's just making that up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, here are some journal articles to show you about what I've got in case occasionally she still gets a doctor that questions that. But you've got the information there with you, and so that's all really important. And it's really important, too, to always carry with you a list of your contact people, your allergies, the medications that you are taking now, all of them, including the over-the-counter, and carry that with you. You need it anytime you're going to have to go to a doctor. And if you were to pass out, be in a car wreck, something like that, and you're on some critical medications or you have a critical illness, it can save your life mm-hmm. if that information's there where the doctor can access it right away.
You mentioned psychological stressors. Now, you're a psychiatrist, so I imagine, you know, when people come into your office, both sides sort of know what you're there to talk about. On the other hand, I have to imagine that there are people who go to a doctor for a particular physiological symptom and can't imagine that that's related to the fact that they're going through a divorce and they just lost their job and their dog died. And I don't mean to make light of any of those things, but people might not think to talk to a doctor about stress, and yet it can have a physiological effect.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the reason I changed from pathology to psychiatry was because I was sitting there as a pathologist looking at these specimens that are removed surgically and they're normal. And what that's telling me is these people have real pain,
mm-hmm.
but the driving force is not from their body. It's from their emotions. And we have this bad tendency in society to somehow think that makes you a failure or a bad person or something if it's emotional. But you know, so often we learn to stuff our feelings and not talk about our feelings as if somehow that's a terrible and taboo thing. And our body and nervous system are very smart. If you don't talk about it, it's going to come out in some other way, and it's going to let us know something's going on. So if you go in and the doctor's working and working to find out what's going on and they can't, chances are it is one of those emotional things. And when you can work on that, it's going to help with the problems. I have a lady who came in and she had horrible, what was looking like irritable bowel. She had this nonstop diarrhea and whatever. It had been going on for 4 years. Well, it turned out that this came on 25 years before her aunt who had raised her had died. She then bought a horse that she raised from a foal that had been her closest companion. She never married. And when that horse died is when her symptoms started. Okay, so the diarrhea was a pretty clear comment about what her life was like at that point. And so as we helped her work on her grief and talk about these issues, lo and behold, she's gotten dramatic improvement in her bowel that just couldn't stomach what was going on. Had her guts in an uproar.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Ed in Arlington. Hello, Ed.
Well, I applaud the good Dr. Cook's efforts that she's been describing during this hour, particularly writing her book. However, let's be real. In her wildest dreams, I bet this book might reach 1 out of 1,000 patients in the U.S., or forget patients, just people who consult the doctor on a regular basis when they're perfectly healthy. I'm concerned that there's a little bit of a blame the patient approach for some of the problems discussed, particularly earlier in the show.
Well, Ed, I take your point, and I think Judy does too. Do you want to respond to that, and is that your intention here?
It's not my intent to blame the patient. It's my intent to make the patients understand that the medical system has changed drastically, and there are things that patients are just going to have to be doing to look out for themselves, not because doctors don't care. I don't want to make patients look bad. I don't want to make doctors look bad. I just want people to know these are problems and you need to work on them. And if it's 1 in 1,000 people that I help, that's better than not helping any.
Talk about this. There are people who have health problems that doctors struggle to diagnose, right? Even in a perfect world, it's not always easy to know what the problem is, what the source of it is. And some patients feel as if they are sort of blamed for making it up. Can you talk about the best ways that people maybe can, who have to visit doctor after doctor to try and find a solution, can communicate about their problems to ultimately figure out what might be done?
Well, I think one of the best things is when you get to the illness, really stick, again, to the facts. And you don't need to start with your history from, you know, great Aunt Lucy upset me and a number of other things. Some people do have very difficult illnesses, and sometimes you have to look a lot of different places. Again, when you talk to the doctor, say, hey, you know, this sounds a little bit like something I may be having. Is there anything worth researching here? Where could I go to research it? Is there a doctor that you know that might specialize in this area? And, you know, people do come up with some things that sound totally off the wall. But if the doctor's willing to do a little research, it might not be so off the wall. I mean, I had a patient who was allergic to steroids. And, you know, the dermatologist was calling me a quack for agreeing with him and upset with the patient. Well, I sent that particular patient to the steroid allergy program at the local medical school and got them treatment there. I've had times when I've had to send the patient with documentation where I've highlighted out of resources what's going on. So it often takes a team. No doctor knows everything. There's just too much in medicine. So, you just kind of have to stick with it.
Let's talk about Google. I do research for a living, and occasionally we're researching something medical or health related, and there's a lot of great information out there, and there's a lot of absolute quackery out there. And I'm not a scientist, but I've learned to at least sort of put them in two categories.
Yes.
What do you recommend to people who maybe haven't had a lot of experience in doing research on something that might be a new condition for them and want to get solid information beyond what the doctor has time to communicate? Where should they look? Who should they trust, particularly online?
There are several medical schools that have online sites in places like Mayo Clinic, Harvard, Perelman Medical School. So there are a lot of places like that. If you find a site where they suddenly had this miraculous cure that came out of the jungles of wherever, and it's going to fix your symptoms like this, run, because, you know, that's snake oil peddling. And be sure you check multiple sites. And you may get an idea of another doctor to go to or another site to go to. But don't just read one thing and stop there. If something seems a little bit, maybe, you may even want to go to somewhere like Snopes and check it out, because sometimes those things are so blatant that they've already been discredited at a research site like that. I stick with some of the more solid medical industry sites, and then compare to some of the other things you see out there. And I've seen sometimes some very good comments come from patients who have experienced things and just want to share it. But you take all of it with a grain of salt, and you get several different things as input, and then you start discussing with your doctor those options.
I know some doctors will discourage patients from looking online, particularly if they have a prognosis that is not encouraging.
If they have a prognosis that's not encouraging, or also if they're one of those people who's very suggestible. And some people are that way. It's neither good nor bad. It's just simply how they are. In terms of bad prognosis, I think each patient has to make their own decision on that? If they want to, they've got a bad prognosis, but they want to learn everything they can, learn if there's some other place they might go to get treatment, some place that specializes in it, some options to consider. You know, it's their right to do that research and to arm themselves with all the information they want. There are people who have bad diagnoses and they don't want any information. They don't want to talk to anybody about it. They want to just kind of enjoy life as it is and go on until it's their time. But when people want information, I think it's important for us to direct them to responsible sites to go to get that information. And there are always places, too. The American Cancer Society, the American Diabetes Organization, various specialty organizations that are good places to look.
Let's go back to the phones now. This time we have Carol on the line in Tyler. Hi, Carol.
Yes, good afternoon. I'll make it quick. I have good doctors. Just this morning I had an appointment with a specialist referred to by my general doctor about 3 weeks ago. And when I got over there, the specialist did not have the test, the MRIs, or anything to look at. So that meant that when I got to the specialist, he didn't have anything. And so should I have been the one to track that down and make sure they got over there to the specialist?
Well, unfortunately, it probably is a good idea for patients to help keep track on that. Despite the things that we're trying to do with electronic health records and whatever, people in offices are fallible. You need to sign, obviously, a release of information with the doctor who's referring you so that they will send over that information, and then check to make sure that they have sent it and check with the specialist to make sure that they have gotten it. Because, you know, things do get in the way, and if the practice is really, really busy, sometimes there's office staff that don't jump in and do things as quickly as they should, or they get busy and they forget. So in your best interest, yes, be proactive and do make sure that that's done so it saves you time and effort and money and saves everybody frustration, including the doctor.
Give us your take on Obamacare thus far and whether you think this will overall be good or bad for the people signing on to the exchanges.
You know, Obamacare is the sixth time in history to try and make some modifications in our health care system, which has gotten progressively sicker over time. It's a big piece of legislation. It will continue to be challenged and probably continue to be modified, but it is providing some help. It's being resisted a lot by insurance companies because they're afraid it's going to interfere with their profit, despite the fact that another one's bragging that they're going to make $19 billion extra dollars this year because of Medicare. But some of the things that it's done already is allowing under 26-year-old people to stay on their parents' insurance. It's paying for preventive evaluations, which is one of the better ways to go, catch disease early and make it less costly to treat it. One of the things that it did that I thought was really clever was, you know, the Advantage programs for Medicare that are supposed to be so much better. He put a limit of 0.5% increase on their premiums that year. And oh my gosh, those insurance companies were screaming like they were about to go bankrupt. And yet they had generally cost the government about $12 billion extra dollars that year in excess charges that they had made to the government. He's also pushed that the insurance companies have to put 80% of their money into patient care as opposed to their profits. You know? So it's driving down the cost of medicines. It's driving up the other things that need to be there. And overall, I think it's doing some good things. You can also go on their sites if your personal insurance is expensive and drive the price down.
Psychiatrist Dr. Judy Cook has a new book. It's called To Die or Not to Die, 10 Tricks to Getting Better Medical Care. Judy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer with help on the phones today from Gus Contreras. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.